Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Melanie, last time we talked about St. Thomas, the apostle.
Okay.
And the fingers in the side thing, and whether he actually ended up putting his hand in his side. So there was some discussion on the StarQuest Discord.
Uh-huh.
And Jay Faz, who I think is in the same religious education course. Jay Faz and Lindsay, you have to tell me. It sounded like you guys are in the same religious education program. But Lindsay Sant, who is the host of Catholics of Oz.
Okay.
And Jay Faz, we're talking about, and he says there was a consensus. Jay Faz says there was a consensus from my religious education team that Thomas did not touch Jesus's wounds. Lindsay Sant also put us onto a lecture from a great Australian biblical scholar, Father Frank Maloney, who pointed out that, like the beloved disciple who believed without seeing, this story is for all those believers who have not seen but still believe. John is telling us that we are all beloved disciples. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have not, who yet have come to believe. And Lindsay's then said, thanks for prompting our discussion through Raising the Bets. Our discussion over the weekend about Thomas and Jesus led me to learn something profound and unexpected. So,
nice.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate that. I assumed that Jay Faz is a guy. Jay Faz sounds like a guy, nickname, alias avatar thing, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. And tell me if I misread whether you guys are actually on the same thing, the same group, because that would be kind of cool. Anyway, let's talk about Taco Stand jelly beans. It is the post-Easter leftover candy clearance sale time.
I love haunting the leftover candy aisle. Like every time I go to the pharmacy, I find something to get in the leftover candy 50% off sale bin.
Yes. And most of the good stuff is gone by now.
Oh yeah.
2 weeks after Easter, it's the dregs.
But you've been like complaining about how they don't have jelly beans.
Nobody sells jelly beans after Easter.
After Easter.
Yeah, like jelly bean is an Easter thing, apparently. I mean, it's not like I need jelly beans, but I like jelly beans. And frankly, these days I don't get enough jelly beans because the kids eat them all. Or they leave me the ones that they don't like. I get all the white and black jelly beans.
Yep.
And so what you get left these days in the aisles of the clearance aisles is you get all the weird
experimental flavors that they were just trying out to see what would happen.
Like, hot tamale peeps, which is just weird.
Yeah. Those have been sitting there. I was shocked to find.
Yay.
I was shocked to find that all the banana cream, marshmallow eggs were actually bought. There was like 30 of them in the store, well, and somebody came in and bought a bunch.
That's the other truth is there's a weird candy for everyone.
Then again, maybe somebody bought them to prank all their friends.
Well, there's that. See, I like candy corn.
Yeah.
People hate candy corn.
I actually like
candy corn. So there's a person out there for every weird candy. This is true. It's like a weird, demented, like Hanna-Barbera Christmas special.
Actually, that's one of my favorite recurrent Facebook memes is the, like, which is the gross candy and which is the best candy? Like, rank your favorite candies.
Oh, yeah.
Because people always feel very strongly, and there's always somebody who thinks that something is disgusting when there's somebody else who says that's their favorite.
What was the TV show on the Food Network that was like all about the obscure candies?
I do not remember this.
Unpacked or, oh man, like we'd always see when we go visit my mom up in Maine, because she would have the Food Network on 24/7.
You see, I tried to avoid HGTV. Watching these things.
Well, I did too, but these were interesting because it was like, you know, there's a plant out there still making the hot tamale candies, you know, or Mike and Ike's, you know, and how do they make that? And that's, you know, that sort of thing. And, That's what it kind of reminds me of. Anyway, we've gotten far afield from the real reason I brought this up, which is taco stand jelly beans.
So Lucy and I were...
Imagine if Bernie Botts jelly beans went to Mexico for vacation.
Lucy and I were at the pharmacy and we saw the taco stand. I was, well, at first I saw, oh, jelly beans.
And you thought of me.
And I thought of you.
Yay.
And then I realized that they were taco stand jelly beans.
And then you said, oh, yes, I'm going to get him.
I said, should we get these, Lucy? And she said, that might be kind of mean. I said, oh, but it would be fun. And she said, oh, yeah, it would be fun. I said, I probably shouldn't get them. And she said, oh, no, you should definitely get them.
Has not fallen far from the tree.
She spent the entire drive home gleefully chortling about how everyone was going to be, like, tricked by the taco stand jelly beans.
Let me tell you about some of the flavors you'll experience south of the border with your jelly beans. There's a guacamole jelly bean.
Salsa.
There's a salsa jelly bean. There's a churro jelly bean, which is not offensive. It's cinnamon. Okay, that actually is a sweet. What was the other sweet one?
Margarita.
Oh, margarita jelly bean. That wasn't bad. Beef taco jelly bean. Folks, it's disgusting. The beef. You put a jelly bean in your mouth, take a bite. And get, I'm sorry, I don't know what it tastes like. It's like licking the bottom of a fryer vat at a Taco Bell. It is so gross. Oh, and then the worst is if you put a handful in your mouth and you get it all at once.
Now, what's incredible to me is that you kept eating them.
I did it twice. Now, like, once is just like, oh my gosh, that was a mistake. Twice is insanity. I was insane.
Yes, that was. It was definitely worth what I paid for them to watch the insanity. It was so fun.
What was Sophie was so, with?
I gave Sophie a salsa one, and she was like horrified.
Horrified. That's just
she something. Was trying to like drink and then like eat something to get the flavor out of her mouth. She's like, that's the most foul thing I've ever tasted.
Do you remember in old science fiction where they used to think that in the future all food would come in pill form?
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what they've done, and we've proven why that's a bad idea. I do not want my salsa in pill form. So, yeah, I'll have to go find some jelly beans somewhere and have some actual jelly bean flavors. What are we going to do with the rest of this bag of jelly beans?
They're probably going to
end up in the trash.
Yeah.
That seems like such a shame. We should have a party and put them out. This is what I did in college. I've told the story about the extra hot, extra hurt me hot wings.
Right.
Where we put them out. They were so hot that it was actually painful to eat. Like, don't get me wrong. I liked hot wings. I liked hot wings that kind of burned and tingled. I did not like, and these were really tasty, but they were super, 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 super so hot you couldn't eat them. You just
that's like the one time I bought ghost pepper
salsa.
No, it wasn't salsa. It was queso.
This ghost queso pepper cheese. Queso, right?
And you could like dip one tiny corner of a chip.
Yes.
Into like the barest dot of salsa, and then your mouth would be on fire. You could not taste the cheese.
Yeah.
It was like I think we kept it around for like 4 or 5 months, and I kept going back occasionally and trying it, and it never got better. It never did.
Did I yet? I must have told the Triple Extra Hurt Me Hot Wing story on this podcast once before.
You must have.
I must have. So I won't repeat it. I'll get a link. I've written it up and put it on my blog. So if you haven't heard the story, you go to the blog and read it. But we basically, the best hot wings in the world came from this little out of the way place in West Virginia. Trust me. And we got them so hot that I was like addicted to them. I couldn't stop eating them, and they hurt so much for days. And finally, we decided, what do we do with the rest of them? We don't want to throw them away. Let's put them out at a party. But I mean, you don't just put them out. You like without warning people. That's like a felony in some states. So we put a sign on it. These are really, really hot, so if you can't handle hot food, don't eat it, which was an invitation to every guy to walk up and eat one.
Well, because now you've challenged their manhood.
Exactly.
They have to prove.
Can't say we didn't warn you. Yeah. There's a lot more to the story. You have to check it out. I'll put a link. So anyway, taco stand jelly beans, that's a thumbs down on that. We won't be doing that again. Anyway, what else we do this week? We went for a hike today. It was it's Sunday. Beautiful spring day. Like one of the best spring days we've had in a long time. It was like 68, blue sky, a little breeze.
Unfortunately, our children.
But we have anxiety children.
Our children's idea of a perfect day for going on a hike is more like 58.
Well,
68 is too warm.
One or two children want it that cold. Yep. We have Elsa for a child.
Yeah.
We have a child who, you know, when it's 10 degrees out, wants to go outside without a coat on. But if it gets above 55 degrees, I'm dying.
Yes. Which is bizarre to me as a Texan, because I'm like, this is not hot.
Right. This is, frankly, jacket weather.
It's slightly warm, and maybe I'm a little bit overdressed for the day. I was a little bit overdressed. I had too many layers of clothing on, and I had to take them off.
Right. Something.
Not.
Yes. But yeah, so... for us, it was a beautiful, gorgeous day. We went back to a place we've talked about before, Wallamattapoag, the conservation area, which you've been to, but I had never gotten to go to. You guys have been there twice.
Right.
You guys went like during the week when I was working. So this was a chance for me to see it. And this is a bird conservation area, partially bird conservation.
It's general conservation, but
it's conservation land.
But there happened to be. It happens to be a really good place for birding. And you will see lots of birders with the big cameras and the
big telescopes.
Yep. And the binoculars, because it has a heron rookery.
Right. So there's a beaver pond and there's some really cool beaver lodges there and a beaver dam.
And some nesting we saw a pair of nesting ospreys.
I knocked at the beaver lodge. I said we were friends of Aslan. They didn't come out, so I don't know what was going on with that. But yes, they have. So the beaver pond causes a die off of the trees that get flooded, and then the trees become perfect platforms for heron nests and osprey nests.
Yep, and
lots of other birds.
Yes, and Bella's super excitement. Great horned owl nest.
That's a new one for her, right?
She's never seen any owls in the wild. We have seen owls at a program.
Nature programs, yeah.
Programs like at the library. There's a guy who brought owls to the library, and we've seen them at the Nature Center.
Yeah, do you remember the Nature Center down in Norwell we went to? They had an owl in an outdoor thing.
And then Great Blue Hills has owls, too.
But yeah, this was in the wild, and it was really nice because there was a couple birders there, and he was like, hey, do you want to look through my telescope and look at them?
You could not see the owls with the naked eye.
Yeah.
They were too far away. But yeah, very nice people let the kids look through their telescopes, and it was cool. I tried to look through the telescope, and honestly, my vision is so bad. I saw a pile of brown. There might have been an owl there. I could not really make it out, and I felt kind of sad, but I didn't want to trespass and like sit there for 10 minutes, like trying to get a good view through this guy's telescope.
Right.
So,
yeah, it was a spotting scope. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't bother. I didn't want to impose with those. There's seven of us, so taking turns. All the kids had to go look and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it was nice. It was a nice hike. We didn't get to go all the way around.
We've never. It's a really long loop.
I think you could probably do it in maybe 2 hours. So looking at the map and the distance we traveled, especially if you're not stopping every 15 minutes because children are complaining and then drinking copious amounts of water and stopping for a snack every 5 seconds. But I don't know what it is. These kids get outdoors and start walking, and some of them, they need to eat. It's kind of funny. But yeah. Hiking with kids who have anxieties is an adventure. One child gets anxious if some of the kids get too far ahead. Another one just doesn't want anyone around them while they're walking because they're too loud. And, you know, it's just, you deal with it. You sigh. You try to calm them down.
Two children at one point both absolutely wanted me to be with them, but one of them wanted to be with me and no one else.
Right. An impossible situation.
You just, some days you can't win.
Yep. Anyway, other stuff we saw a garter snake. That was very exciting. There was lots of little chipmunks running around. We saw a swallow nest. We saw a swallow going in and out of a nest in a trunk, in a tree trunk, and heard the babies cheeping. That was pretty cute. So it was really nice. Wallamanapoag. If you're in the south of Boston area, or even in Rhode Island, if you're in like eastern Rhode Island, that would be not a bad trip too. It's just south of Foxborough and Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play, like 20 minutes from there. So it was really nice. So let's talk about what we've been eating besides disgusting jelly beans. So I made a couple of new things this week. There was a recipe for pajeon, or Korean scallion pancakes. Now, scallion pancakes are good. I've had Chinese scallion pancakes at Chinese restaurants for ages. And I really like them. And I don't know why I don't order them more. That's kind of a weird thing. I think when I was a kid, my mom didn't order them because they were too popular and there was never enough for everybody. And we'd fight over it. And she's like, well, I'm not getting that because I don't want to have, you know, those fights. But when we're ordering Chinese food, I'm going to get scallion pancakes again because those are good. But this was good from scratch. There's a sauce. Soy sauce, you know, yeah, soy sauce, rice vinegar, and gochugaru, which is the Korean red chili flakes. And then the pancakes themselves with it's made with flour, potato starch, sugar, baking powder, baking soda, salt, pepper, ice water, which is interesting because ice water with the baking powder, like there's a baking thing with that, right? Cold water.
I know that you use cold water for like pie crust dough. I don't know any other applications for cold water.
Yeah, I was curious about that. It didn't explain why. Anyway, and then a whole bunch of scallions. And we had a ton of scallions because I overbought them 2 weeks in a row for some reason. I think it was on the list and didn't get crossed off.
I like scallions.
Yeah, so do I. Sorry. And I've been thinking, oh, all these scallions, I better make scallion pancakes. So what it has to do is make this batter. And then the instruction is, it's in this bowl, run a spatula down the middle and then push half of it off onto into the pan. And I'm like, that doesn't really work. Like, it just streams back.
Your batter was thick enough.
Was not as thick as I think they imagined it. So the first one was really kind of thin and crispy. The second pancake, I should have divided that into two because that ended up being really thick and doughy, which was still tasty, but it didn't have that crunchiness that I really like out of a scallion pancake like the first one did. But as far as the recipe goes, it was a good recipe. Cooks Illustrated, I think. And I really like that. So the scallion pancake, I'll definitely be making that again. It was fairly easy to make. And if I can make three of them at a time, that's a nice side dish or appetizer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if we do another smorgasbord night.
I have a feeling that we're going to run into why your mom didn't let you order them.
Everybody liked them.
Everybody's going to want some and there's not going to be enough.
Everybody wants some. Or I'll just make more. But yeah, double. I just double every recipe out there now. Just like every recipe I encounter, I just double it automatically because it's just that many kids. The other thing I made was a main dish called mee goreng.
Maine is in from the state of Maine? Or
no,
Maine
no, no.
Is
like,
in like a...
this was the dinner dish.
Okay.
Yeah. Mee goreng. It's Indonesian stir-fried noodles with red pepper. And it optionally, the recipe optionally said you could optionally add some seared shrimp at the end, which is what we did. We had this on Friday, I think. So it's got a sauce, soy sauce, oyster sauce, brown sugar, a little bit of ground cumin, which is interesting. Just a teeny bit.
I couldn't taste the cumin.
For the doubled recipe, there was a half teaspoon in the sauce. Like on the regular recipe, it was a quarter teaspoon. It was just a tiny bit. And then salt and pepper. It wanted you to use fresh yellow Asian wheat noodles, but we don't have those at the store. But they did suggest yakisoba noodles, which were at the store. And I picked up a bunch of those. And then for the stuff that goes in it, green cabbage, I used Napa cabbage, shallots. I only had one shallot, so I used red onion for the rest, which worked.
You could have used some of those scallions, too.
I could have. But I wanted the color. So I think if I just used red onion, it would have been fine, too. Red bell pepper, bunch of garlic in that, more scallions. This actually called for two bunches of scallions. So there were scallions in it.
There were scallions.
And then when you serve it with lime wedges and sambal oleg or chili garlic sauce, the Asian chili garlic sauce. But you serve that at the table to your own portion, which is good.
It was good with the chili garlic.
Yeah. So, and then I added the shrimp, but you were thinking it could have gone well with...
you could put chicken in it.
You could have put chicken in. I also added mushrooms. What else did I add?
Oh, mushrooms are always...
Mushrooms are good. I think I could have added carrots and celery. Like, really could have bulked it up.
It could have had more veggies in it.
The nice thing is...
I think Anthony would have disagreed.
Well, Anthony doesn't like veggies at all. So the nice thing is so you basically cook the vegetables separately first, and then you cook the noodles, and I'm trying to think of which the order was. Yeah, then you cook the noodles in the sauce, and the sauce is a really dry sauce. In fact, it kind of dries up, and the noodles start to brown a little, which is interesting. So, like, they get a little browning on it, a little carbonization. So you get a little of that flavor of the sear on it, it came out really, really good. Everybody loved it. It was 100% meal. Everybody had some and wanted more. So definitely a keeper, that one. I'll do that one again. One other thing I just want to mention about something cooking, and I probably have mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again. We had pork chops for dinner. I like to cook, when I cook them on the grill, really thick boneless pork chops. And the grocery store just doesn't sell them. Like, I like a half, inch and a half to 2 inches of a pork chop. And I brine them, and it makes them moist and really taste really good. Keeps it from drying out on the grill, especially over charcoal. But if you can't get them at the grocery store, what you can do is buy a pork loin, which is less expensive than buying the pork chops, and then cut the loin. It's basically pork chops. So you just cut the loin into 2-inch thick chops.
I think I read about that in a magazine or book or article or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great little tip. And loin, around here anyway, pork loin is, I think, a little less expensive per pound than pork chops, especially thick pork chops. So that's what we've been eating, cooking. Let's talk about things we've been reading or watching. So I went to the movies with Father Chip, and we saw before the return of our series that we do on the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows podcast. We do something called Coffee and Cinema, where Father Chip and I go to a movie. We come out, we get a cup of coffee, and we sit and we talk about our first impressions of the movie, just having seen it. And we haven't done that in 2 years because of the pandemic. And we finally got a chance to be able to do that again. So it's nice. So you'll be able to listen to that on the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows podcast, I think coming up this week. But just as a brief, my impression of this, Father Stu is really good. It is a really good movie. I know some people criticize the language. It is a lot of bad language. There's a lot of swearing. There's a lot of Anglo-Saxon swearing in it. Mm-hmm. Too much. There really is too much. Like, I get the authenticity aspect, but it was excessive. Like, you really didn't need to do that. But nevertheless, no matter how you feel about bad language, it's a really good movie. And what I really like about it is it doesn't sugarcoat it. It doesn't sugarcoat his journey. It doesn't sugarcoat any of the struggles that he goes through. Really good movie. So I'll talk about, you'll hear me talk more about that in Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. Another thing I just started watching on Apple TV is a series called Slow Horses. And it's based on a book series about Slow Horse is about these agents who serve at a particular, MI5 is basically the British FBI.
Uh-huh.
It's the internal or domestic intelligence, counterintelligence or intelligence unit. They're not exactly law enforcement. They're more like the CIA for internal, if it makes any makes sense. The FBI kind of does law enforcement and domestic intelligence, whatever. So that you have this particular unit at a place. British always give place names to everything. And so Slough House is this particular building that these agents work in. And it's where all the screw ups go. It's where all the agents who have dead ended their careers through some error or mistake. And they're all sent here to work out their time before they quit or retire or whatever. And they each have gone there for various dumb reasons. Like one guy left a classified file on a train and oops. Yeah. And, you know, not the end of the world. No one died, you know, but it's just a stupid error and nobody can trust him anymore. And off he goes. And so, and then Gary Oldman plays the guy who runs this unit. And he's just, Gary Oldman is just such a method actor. He's so obnoxious, his character. So cruel in a like casually cruel way, but in not like a I'm the cruel taskmaster, just like you can tell he kind of hates himself. And so he just kind of is mean to other people because they're all screw ups and that's what you're here for. And I'm a screw up. And he's just kind of gross, like it's a slob. And, you know, and so he does a fantastic job. But it's just, it follows this one guy who screwed up and he thinks that he can solve this thing that is happening. I'm trying not to give too much away. I've watched a couple episodes. It's pretty good so far. I'm enjoying it. I recommend it. I've heard they've given it a second season, which is a good recommendation. And, The only negative really so far is some of the accents are really hard to get. And at times I've been tempted to turn on the subtitles.
I would totally turn on the subtitles.
Yeah. It hasn't gotten to the point where I just totally can't get it. But there's, you know, it's been close. So those are two things I've been watching. We watched together as a family. We've continued our MCU watch. We watched the Spider-Man Far From Home, the second Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. So Melanie, what did you think? Your first time watching it?
It was good. I mean, I was just saying to you, Spider-Man's not like my favorite of the MCU, and I think that if it didn't tie in with the other MCU movies, I would not be like as eager to see it.
If it was just standalone.
Right. And it's not like it was a bad movie. It was just more that, I think partly it's the whole teenage plot that's driven by, I'm not telling you this important thing. I'm concealing it from everyone. That kind of plot just drives me bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like the plot that hinges on people not communicating with each other
in ways that normal people would.
Right. Just like I spend a lot of the movie going, just tell her, just say it. At least in this one, he finally like has the conversation with MJ and tells her, and Aunt May knows. And so there's a little bit less of that angst, but there's still some of the I've got to conceal my identity angst, even though it's glaringly obvious. Like it should be glaringly obvious to everyone.
What's the Clark Kent thing, right?
Yeah. So that aside, it was a fun movie. I like Tom Holland. He's fun. And what they do with the Spider-Man in the MCU is more interesting, I think, than the standalone Spider-Mans.
The
Spider-Man.
Spider-Mans.
I don't know. Yeah. My grammar is just getting messed up here.
The Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield.
I never saw Andrew Garfield's. I did see Tobey Maguire. And, you know, again, the Spider-Man just isn't really my thing.
And just FYI, folks, Melanie has not seen the latest Spider-Man movie. So just.
I haven't.
Yes. No.
So I'm watching these with the kids, like my first time, and which is fun. There were some moments where the movie totally like suckered me, and I did not see it, even though the kids were like, "Oh no, 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 no! Don't trust them, don't trust them!" And I'm like, "Why not?"
The big reveal, the big twist.
Right. I actually didn't see that coming. There were a couple things that I didn't see coming. And I don't know if that's because I was sort of not looking very hard. Like, I can watch with my, like, I'm looking and I'm going to figure this all out goggles on. Or I can watch with the, I'm just along for the ride and I really don't want to figure things out before I figure them out.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway. I do like that we're continuing in this one. This one starts after the blip of
Thanos.
Of Thanos. So after the Infinity War endgame plot line.
Everybody went away and came back.
Right. And conveniently, Peter and Aunt May and
MJ and
best
Ned,
friend and love interest all were snapped, so they don't have to deal with the
somebody being 5 years older.
Yeah, handy that.
Yep.
That said, I do think that I like what they're doing with the continued, like, you can't just have everybody in half of the population of the world disappear for 5 years and then come back, and it's all fine. And I like the fact that they. I mean, I don't think that they make it as traumatic as it would be
even worse than they make it in the movie. Right. Yeah.
But they at least try to in the story deal with that.
Right.
The trauma, the logistical problems of, you know, I come back and somebody's living in my apartment and who has the right to the apartment now? So they're doing actually a fundraiser at the beginning of the movie for
homeless
people who are displaced by Thanos.
Well, in fact, there's they take this even further in WandaVision and then in Falcon and Winter Soldier. They take the consequences of the snap even further.
Right. And so this is sort of the first step in that. And I do like what they're doing with that. And
I kind of wish Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could have been there for the snap stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Seeing how they dealt with that.
One of the things. Yeah, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did not. Like, they dropped that from their timeline.
They just weren't.
They were tracking the MCU up until.
Right. They basically went off in a branching timeline.
Right. Which was okay. I mean, I liked the shows, but it would have been fun to see them dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
And how would they tie that in? But, you know, in the Spider-Man, like, there are no Avengers anymore, and he's left, like, trying to be the Avenger when he's just a teenage kid who also wants to just have his own life. And I thought I liked that better, in fact, than because there's the gap left by the Avengers. I felt like Peter Parker's need to get involved is a lot more believable when...
Right.
Something bad has happened that's taken out a lot of the Avengers, and it felt more plausible.
Right. So who's left from the Avengers? So Thor, who's off world?
Thor is off world.
So you have Falcon, you have Winter Soldier, you have Wanda. We know where Wanda is.
Right.
You have Hawkeye, who's retired. You have Ant-Man,
who's not.
Really, he's sort of Avenger, auxiliary Avenger.
Right.
But yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, where's the next group of Avengers coming from? I'm curious, just in a general sense, are they going to have a new Iron Man? Will they put somebody else in the suit? That's an interesting.
I mean, they kind of
like
have
Pepper
tried that. Sort of.
I mean, we have a new Hawkeye, a female Hawkeye. We have a new Black Widow.
Although she's not really technically Hawkeye, but
no,
she's sort of.
Sure. We have a new Black Widow. We're getting a new Thorina.
Maybe
of some sort. The Hulk is still around, Professor Hulk.
But he was not taking calls, I guess.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's interesting to think where we're going with this. Shang-Chi might be in the cards. Did you see the movie, Shang-Chi?
Yeah, we watched it together.
Oh, we did. You sure?
Yes.
That's right, we did.
I am positive.
Yes. Okay, anyway, that was Spider-Man Far From Home. From here, we're going to watch WandaVision. We're going to start watching this streaming series. Then, once we'll get through the three, WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, Loki, then we'll watch Shang-Chi and Black Widow. We're not watching The Eternals. It doesn't connect at this point, and there's stuff in it that I just don't want the kids to watch.
Right.
So, all right. Let us talk. Oh, also Moon Knight was, we watched the latest Night Monkey. Which now having watched Spider-Man Far From Home, now we remember where Night Monkey comes from.
Did we talk about Night Monkey?
We kept calling Moon Knight Night Monkey.
My sister's housemate cannot remember Moon Knight and calls it Night Monkey. And then we thought that was funny, so we started kind of picking it up too. But
and then it turns out Night Monkey comes from Spider-Man Far From Home, because when he's running around Europe, they're like, if Spider-Man shows up in Europe at the same time Peter Parker's in Europe, everyone's going to know. So his friend Ned like dubbed him Night Monkey. Because he was in a black suit or something.
Yes, black suit swinging around.
Yeah, like a monkey with webs. Maybe he's a spider monkey.
Spider monkey. Oh, boy.
Night monkey. Anyway, so Moon Knight, latest episode. What did you think? It was funky.
It was.
Like a lot of Moon Knight so far.
Yeah. So far, the whole series has kept me off kilter. Not sure what. I feel like at least now we've gotten some traction in terms of like knowing,
we kind of know what's going on.
What's going on a bit better.
With the character of Moon Knight himself, Mark. Well, do we want to spoil?
No, we don't want to spoil.
Okay. So we have these two personalities in one body, Steven and Mark. Which one is the real one? Which one, or are they both real? Is he really Moon Knight, or is he just a crazy person in an institution? That's what we kind of struggle with. And I was a little, at first, I was like, when they first revealed that we were going to be like, oh, now he's in an institution, I'm like, that's been done. But I have to say, I really liked this last episode, exploring his origins, his background, what made him who he is. He's, you know, damaged goods. So how did he get damaged? What happened to him? What's his, you know?
They gave him a backstory which fit plausibly with what we've known so far, right? Just watching his character.
And heart-wrenching.
Very, very heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And I suspect that we're going to find yet a third personality before the show is over.
Yes. Somebody else is inside there.
Yeah.
Because there was one scene where both of them seemed to be surprised, like Mark and Steven, surprised at what they did when not aware.
Yeah. So,
yep. Yeah. And there's one more episode, right?
I think there's only one more
episode. There's a lot to wrap up in one episode.
And then we still really don't, so far, have any idea how or if this is going to connect with any of the rest of the MCU.
I don't know if it is. I wonder. Because Shang-Chi didn't really connect.
No. But it could still potentially at some point, maybe.
Sure, they can bring him in.
Right.
As far as we know, Moon Knight is a one-shot, but that doesn't mean, I mean, as a series, doesn't mean they can't bring him into a movie.
Right. So this is my question. Is this the way we're now setting up new characters for the next phase of the MCU? Like giving them their own
streaming series as opposed to movies?
Right.
I mean,
in a way, now that they've got this, like, think about what they might have done.
If Disney Plus had existed in 2010...
Right, like they brought Hawkeye in by just having him sort of be a background character in the Thor movie.
Right.
Could he have been given an origin story as a separate series?
They brought Black Widow in as a background character in Iron Man 2.
That's true. They did.
You know? I think it's entirely possible that they could have brought him in as a streaming series or done a streaming series afterward, you know, after the movie to kind of connect him. And it was kind of what they were trying to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to create this TV series that connects to the movies. But because of the exigencies of network broadcast television, it just was hard to make it work. But with streaming, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. I think that there's interesting possibilities. I'm wondering what they're going to do or if they're going to take advantage of it. Or
right. there's some big master plan online somewhere where they talked about the stuff that's coming out.
I don't want to know too much, though.
No. I know. But there is.
I like to know that there is a master plan. I mean, honestly, one of the things that sold me on MCU was starting to realize that it was more than just a bunch of disconnected superhero movies, that there was some sort of a bigger
overarching vision,
overarching plot and vision, and the things connected. But right now, where we are in the movies and series, I'm not quite sure how they're all going to connect yet. And so I'm still kind of a little bit leery.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean that I'm not going to keep watching, but.
Right.
I'm waiting.
As far as movies go, so Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is coming out.
Right.
This which will Friday.
Clearly connects because we've seen Doctor Strange.
Yep. Thor Love and Thunder in July. Black Panther Wakanda Forever in November. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 next year, like a year from now. All that stuff is, you know, let's see, Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania in February 2023. The Marvels. There is a Ms. Marvel movie coming, which follows a young woman who gets Marvel powers.
Okay.
Which I saw the trailer for that. That looked pretty good. And then other things that are on the block are like Fantastic Four, X-Men. They're talking about doing a rebooting the X-Men.
Now that could be interesting.
Who did I see that they talked about for? Harry Potter. What's his name?
Daniel Radcliffe
as Logan / Wolverine.
Interesting.
It would be interesting to see him bulk up. Blade, rebooting Blade, Captain America 4. Deadpool 3, which you've never seen any of the Deadpools. No. I've only seen one of them. Shang-Chi 2, another Spider-Man. So there's stuff coming.
Right.
There's a lot to come. But I'm just curious. What other series? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there must be series coming. Anyway, let's move on from that. And let's talk about, this is the third Sunday of Easter. So let's talk about the third Sunday of Easter. And Father Pinto was the celebrant at our Mass this week. Father Pinto is a priest of the Holy Cross Fathers.
Yep. Holy Cross Fathers.
I just mixed that up. And he hasn't been in our parish in a while. He's been away, but he did get to come and say Mass this week. One of the things you said you always liked about him is he's always smiling.
Father Pinto has the best smile. He smiles and I just feel like happy. I want to smile back at him. And I just, he's
very joyful.
He radiates joy.
Yep.
And
so just as a reminder of the readings, so the gospel this week is the one that you get every year at this time, which is the disciples have returned to their boats and they're fishing again.
Because Jesus told them to go to Galilee.
Yeah, go to Galilee. I've gone to Galilee. You said, go back to the beginning. This is where I was. This is the Princess Bride.
Peter, obviously, after some time of sitting around waiting for Jesus to show up, he's like, I'm going fishing. Yep. Anybody want to join me? I'm going fishing.
Yes. That's in fact, it literally says that. Simon Peter says that I'm going fishing. We'll go too.
I mean, yeah. It's just so.
I can't help but picture the actress from The Chosen doing this now. Like, that's for the good and the ill. But I'm kind of picturing how they're going to film this eventually. And there was Jesus on the shore. Children, have you caught anything to eat? He calls them children. I like that. They don't recognize him. Nope.
Of course not.
Cast the net over on the other side and you'll find something. And they don't get it. Like, I love the fact that Peter is still kept being a little dense. Like,
at this point, when he says cast the net on the other side.
Wait a minute.
Hold on just a second.
And then when you get it, it's so full that you can't pull it in because of the number of fish. It's only when John, the disciple whom Jesus loved, says to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, you're only just getting it now? Like, I just love that sometimes Peter just doesn't get it. This is like me. It's like, you know, Jesus could have like a neon sign over his head pointing with an arrow pointing, Jesus here, Jesus here. Oh, that's Jesus. So Peter doesn't bother rowing the boat in. He jumps the ocean
out of the boat.
And swims to shore, leaves the other guys with the nets and stuff. And they come in And so this is important. They saw a charcoal fire with fish on it and bread. And Jesus says, bring some of the fish you just caught as well. Like, for some reason.
Is there not enough fish?
Maybe not. So, but, and then Jesus eats some of the fish. Okay. Why is this all important? There's basically two places in the gospel where we see a charcoal fire, where it's mentioned.
Okay.
Here, and in the courtyard of the high priest, where Peter denies Jesus three times.
Oh, right.
So they're gathered around the charcoal fire. And this, just like Peter denied Jesus three times, he's given a chance to affirm Jesus, his faith in Jesus, to tell Jesus he loves him three times. So Jesus has given Peter this chance to make up for his denials. And then, and I like the way he phrases it. Do you love me more than these? More than these what? More than these others. Do you love me more than everyone else? Because Peter had also had previously pledged, even if everyone else abandons you, I will lay down my life with you. And he didn't. Like he ran. And he denied him. So this is where Jesus asks him, do you still want to say that you love me more than all the rest? And now knowing where he's been and what he's done, Peter says, yes, I do. And he says, good. When you were younger, you went where you wanted. But when you get old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go, which is predicting his crucifixion, that Peter will be crucified in Rome essentially later on when he's an old man. And so Peter knows what his fate will be at this point. But I just really love that. Now,
Father Pinto made a really nice point here.
Yep.
Where he says that Jesus, for the triple affirmation, yes, Lord, I love you. When Peter says, I love you, Jesus connects that with a mission. If you love me, feed my sheep.
Yes.
If you love me, tend my flock. If you love me, feed my lambs. Like, it's not just enough to say that you love me. You have to do the thing that people who love me do, which is to take care of my sheep.
You're now the shepherd of the flock, is what he's telling
them. Right. And Jesus, who has said, I am the good shepherd, is now saying, you're the shepherd now, Peter. You're right. The shepherd.
You're the shepherd. Be the shepherd.
Be the shepherd.
Be the ball, Danny. Be the ball.
If you love me, you'll be the shepherd and you will love my sheep.
You will smell like the sheep. I've been around sheep. They do not smell good. Yeah. So it's awesome readings. I also like the first reading where they're brought in before the Sanhedrin. They're flogged. The reading that the church puts here doesn't have the fact that they're flogged, but they actually get flogged like Jesus did. And they get berated. You know, we gave you strict orders. Did we not stop teaching in that name?
Yeah, we actually see the flogging. The kids and I read the daily readings, and mm-hmm. one of the readings for the week in the daily mass actually had the bit where they were flogged, because we talked about that,
right.
About how they were happy to be flogged to be able to suffer for Jesus' sake.
Right, and well, that's how it ends. It's like the Sanhedrin ordered the apostles, stop speaking the name of Jesus, get out. And so they left and rejoiced that they'd been found worthy to suffer dishonor for the sake of the name. Woohoo! Isn't that awesome? And I just love the fact that they rejoice in the suffering.
But how different that is from the 12,
from the apostles in,
who were hiding in the upper room.
Yes,
they've changed so much in such a very short time, and that's the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, it's amazing to see that switch. And once you get to the Book of Acts, how different they are. And we kind of saw that, they kind of showed us that in the, if you haven't watched The Chosen, I'm sorry. And some people, they don't love it, which is fine. But there's that scene in that first episode of the second season where is it John writing the gospel, his gospel? Yes, it's John. And he's interviewing everybody years and years later. And even then you could see the differences in some of the apostles, especially in Peter. He's still a Peter, but there's a difference in him. And it's kind of cool to see that being portrayed on screen like that. So anything else from Father Pinto?
I really liked the anecdote he began with. He talked about a woman who had been struggling with her spiritual journey and trying to find God in prayer and feeling like she just couldn't get to where she wanted to be. And she fell asleep and had a dream that she was standing at a window. It was a really, really thick glass. And she could see God on the other side, but very, very blurrily through the window. And she starts banging on the window and trying to get his attention and then yelling. And then he comes to her and he's like, "Why are you yelling and causing such a commotion? There's nothing between us."
I didn't get that. Is it that the window was imaginary, or that he was not on the other side but was behind her or something?
Well, yeah, I didn't quite follow like how that worked literally, but I really like the imagery, at least, that we sometimes imagine, because I don't know, our prayer life isn't what we expect. We're not feeling the feelings that we expect to feel, that there's a barrier between us and God.
Yeah.
But the reality is there is no barrier. God is the God who comes to us. And Father Pinto talked about like the times in the gospel that we've seen Jesus come physically. You know, he heals the lepers by touching them. He heals the dead man by putting his fingers in his ears. And he raises the girl from the dead by grabbing her hand and pulling her up. He's right there physically with us. That's why the incarnation happened, so that he could be with us, and that the ascension doesn't change that closeness, that intimacy that he wants to have with us. And the barriers there that we're feeling, it's not real. That's our own fears, our own lack of trust, our own hesitation. I mean, it feels real. We feel like there's a distance between us and God, but that's not the reality from God's perspective.
Right.
He is not far away from us. He is near. He is close. I mean, especially when we receive him in the Eucharist, but he's always near.
Right, right. That's good. That's good. I was telling Melanie, when Father Pinto preaches, he has a strong accent. He's Indian, and he speaks in very measured tones, I think, so he can be, to be clear. But it's so measured and so soft that it gets very, it's soporific. And I sometimes drift a little while he's preaching. I never drift when Father Matt is preaching. It's just the difference in style. But I really like his homilies. I just wish I could pay attention better.
I take notes. I pull out my phone. My notes are horrible. They're like very illegible because I'm really bad at typing on the phone. But just the act of trying to record.
Yeah.
It engages my brain like more actively instead of passively, and it helps me stay awake.
I should do that too. I just feel awkward like being on my phone at mass. I shouldn't care what people think. I should just.
I've started using my phone to follow along with the mass readings because the type on it is much bigger than in the missalette, and I just can't.
We're getting old.
I'm old.
You're like your dad. Your dad uses his phone with large type.
Right. And this is the thing is I'm not so self-conscious about it because both of my parents do it. And
yeah,
they're just, who cares what people think? I know that I'm not using my phone to text in the middle of mass or to like surf the web. I'm using it as a tool to help me participate better. Father Pinto also, he ended by saying that, reminding us, that just like Peter is given a mission to go feed the sheep, that our relationship with God is lived out through our relationship with other people, that we have to go out and connect with other people, bring love to other people. Otherwise, we are holding God at arm's length.
Right. Excellent. Good. I think that should do it for this time. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Rebecca L., Attila H., Michael C., Joseph O., and Keith M. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. We'll have links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Send your feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to bets@sqpn.com or visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.